You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Friday, the 31st of May 2024. The Australian share market had a good day with a late rally to be up 1% on the S&P ASX 200. We'll speak with Grady Wolfe from Bell Direct for more a little later. But first, the Financial Review Rich List is out. And while the usual suspects are on the list, like Gina Reinhardt at number one, there are some emerging trends that may have a big implication on the economy, like the intergenerational transfer of wealth. For more, I spoke with Yolanda Redrup. She is a co-editor of The Rich List. Yolanda, first of all, what does it take to be one of Australia's richest people?
Well, for this question, I'm going to speak mainly to self-made rich listers here. And you do find there are some commonalities amongst sort of successful entrepreneurs. As well as being intelligent, they typically have a higher risk appetite than most, which means they're willing to take bets that other people may not. They're willing to put money into things at an early stage and see where that takes them. As well as this, they often also have a really genuine passion for a problem that they're trying to solve and almost a singular focused mindset that lets them really commit the vast majority of their time to that business. And that can come at sacrifices, working 7 days a week, less time with friends and family, but they are willing to spend that time on building their empires. And they're also probably good at hiring for their weaknesses. So they'll be very aware of the skills that they have and also where they fall short and be willing to bring in people that can plug their own gaps.
So when you look at the list this year, what have been some of the key trends?
There's been a couple. One that I focused on that comes through in our magazine this year is around the aging nature of the list, how that ties into this theme that was playing out across society of the great wealth transfer. The rich list is getting older. The average age is over 67 now. And there's actually 45 rich listers that are aged 80 and over, and they control around $136 billion worth of wealth, which is a pretty crazy figure. Now, there have also been in the past year 5 rich listers who sadly did pass away. That is probably something we're going to see more of in the coming decade or so. So looking at what that actually means for the future, not just of the rich list, but of the country, who's inheriting that wealth, how families are dividing fortunes, and the consequences of that, where money's going to be invested, what their political beliefs are, that's something we're starting to sort of delve into now. And I think it'll be a continuing sort of topic of conversation for much of the next decade. Another trend we saw this year was around the return of the tech sector. In the previous year, it had fallen off quite a bit as there was a bit of a rotation out of tech amongst investors. But certainly in the 12 months up until our mid-April cutoff for this year's valuations, there was more enthusiasm for tech that resulted in pretty decent share price rises for companies like WiseTech and also ProMedicus and Macquarie Technology Group. Dicker Data saw its co-founders, David Dicker and Fiona Brown, make the list again this year. So that's really been another big trend to play out, is investors being more comfortable putting some money into tech stocks again.
Okay. I think the key term we've heard a lot of over the past year or so is the rising cost of living, right? So to what extent has that rising cost of living impacted these rich listers?
Look, it's probably no surprise that across the rich list, there was an 11% jump in total wealth this year. So I don't think you could say that they are suffering the same cost of living pressures that the rest of us might be feeling. Generally, even where pressures might come in, that often gets outweighed by things like property price rises, or a lot of these rich listers do have quite significant cash holdings. And obviously, whilst mortgages are going up for those of us that have to borrow money, the consequence of that too for people that have a lot of cash in the bank is that they actually get better term deposit rates, and you know, they actually generate money off the back of that. So by and large, there hasn't been a lot of impact from cost of living pressures. And that's something that I think that quite a few of them are probably quite aware of. There is some hesitancy, I suppose, amongst Australians to talk openly around wealth. And I think that's certainly been more prominent this year. And I think that is a key part of it, is an awareness of the fact that not everyone is doing well at the moment, and there are additional pressures on people out there.
Any notable entries or exits on the list?
Yeah, there are a couple. We actually had 11 debutantes this year, which was quite exciting. One of the more interesting ones I found, and there aren't too many hidden billionaire families these days, but Simon Dyer and his family, they are based out of Queensland. They are responsible for building the Sealy Posturepedic mattress brand within Australia. That's pretty much a household name. Most people are either aware of or sleep on a Sealy mattress every night, but until now, no one was really aware of just how significant that business was or how wealthy that family had been since bringing that brand to Australia. So they make their debut this year. Another one is Robin Murphy and his family, who are behind the business Canstruct. They have a variety of investments, but one of the things that have put them in the headlines in the past couple of years is that they had their contract with the government around the Nauru Detention Centre, which saw their business Canstruct generate quite a bit of money, and they are making their debut this year. And then an entrepreneurial success story of recent times is the Zimmerman sisters, Nikki and Simone. They have sold off portions of their company to private equity over the last couple of years, most recently just last year. And that's put the valuation of their fashion label high enough that's put them into the ranks of the top 200 this year as well.
And finally, any key migrant stories there?
Yeah, there certainly are. There's actually gracing the cover of our magazine this year is Charlie Shaheen. He was a former Palestinian refugee from Lebanon who came to Australia with his family in 1984, settled in Adelaide. He and his father, Fred, built up petrol station and convenience store business, which actually went on to become South Australia's largest private company. Now he's also invested in property. He's invested in land up in the Northern Territory, and it's a really fascinating story. So highly recommend people read that one. There's also Michael Hintz. Now he's now based out of the UK, but he was born in China to Russian parents before coming to Australia and being raised here. And he's become one of the country's most successful expatriate investors. He's also now a lord, I should say. And last year, he sold most of his $20 billion managed funds company to a Canadian giant called Manulife Investment Management, and that's resulted in him once again making the list this year. And then there's also Nick Damaro, and he once owned a delicatessen and a plumbing business, I should say, but he bought his first shopping centre in Adelaide in the 90s and has gone on to amass quite a bit of wealth in the mall space, and is worth over $1 billion today. And he is an immigrant from Italy. And those are just three of a range of migrant stories. It's something that's really prominent on our wish list, is just how much immigrants have contributed to the wealth of the country and to the economy. And that comes through really clearly in the top 200.
That is Yolanda Redrup there from the Financial Review Rich List.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
The Australian share market opened stronger today, held those gains, and then rallied at the very end to close 1% firmer, 7,701 on the S&P ASX 200. For more, I spoke with Grady Wolfe from Bell Direct. Grady, can we start with Donald Trump's guilty conviction in the US? To what extent could that have market implications both overseas and here?
It's really interesting you speak about the Trump conviction, because he is the first president ever to have this conviction. Well, president in the making or in the running to have this conviction. Now, it's not really seen and not really known the implications on the market just yet. So obviously the guilty verdict came in the last hour of trade in the US overnight. This saw the Trump media share price fall 14%. So naturally investors were not impressed with what the verdict was. But what happens next is he can appeal, and should there be an appeal, it's expected to be after the election. So what this means is if he gets in, then naturally he'll have to go to this appeal afterwards, could be found guilty again, and therefore then it's kind of a catch-22 because it's rewarding someone for illegal behaviour. So that undermines the US legal system and it doesn't look great. So at the moment, we're not sure what the legal implications and what the market implications are, but we'll see obviously on Friday in the US time when the US markets open what investors are saying about it. But right now it's definitely a rate-driven market. So we may see very little implications from the Trump guilty verdict, but probably more later in the year when the election comes along.
In terms of the US economy, US GDP expanded slower than expected at 1.3% annualized in the first 3 months of 2024. You spoke of interest rates just then. Could this play into the interest rate story?
See, a GDP reading indicates the robustness of an economy. It doesn't necessarily play into a rate outlook or inflationary front. The drastic ease in economic growth in the US to 1.3% annualized for the first quarter, down from a 3.4% in Q4, shows the US economy is starting to hurt and ease growth in the current high interest rate environment. So what this says is that it reignites fears of stagflation. So that's where inflation continues to stay higher, but economic growth eases, and obviously recession fears come from that. So what we're seeing on this front is it might not have an implication on the outlook for rates, but it definitely hurts the US economy. But we're seeing it's a very data-driven front this week in the US. So we had initial jobless claims out overnight. They came in more than expected. So that's showing increased loosening of the tight US labor market. But until we see goods and services inflation come under control, those are the key sticky points in the US. We're unlikely to see the Fed talk about rate cuts anytime soon.
Okay, let's focus on our share market now. I think shares are up today. Why and who's driving the market?
Yeah, it's a broad buy-in rally today. And so that's after 3 days of sell-off. So investors are simply buying back into the opportunities in the markets where some stocks may have been oversold. The gold miners were up today because the price of gold definitely went back up today. So about 2300 mark. And healthcare stocks led the charge today. So up over 1%. And that was led by Telix Pharmaceuticals with their most recent results out for their cancer imaging and therapy drug in their ProstAct Select trial at the moment. So they had some really favourable results there on the efficacy front, meaning investors were very pleased with what they saw today for Telix. So the healthcare sector was the leader today.
Okay. One of the big stories of the week was that of BHP walking away from making a formal offer for Anglo American. What do you think happens next?
Yeah, absolutely. They have been going very hard at this copper play, and we know that they're diversifying and they're trying to become the world's leading copper producer. Copper is the key element, or one of the key elements for the green energy transition, so it's not going away anytime soon. We did see it have a false start last year, but it's definitely one of the commodities at the moment right now. What this means is BHP is likely to walk away and maybe come back in 6 months' time when they can to give a better offer to Anglo American today. But in the meantime, they might actually look at smaller players to take over assets and to acquire assets of copper front and copper assets around the world from smaller players in the different mining jurisdictions. What we also saw is that investors were actually impressed today because they thought that they were overpaying with the current offer of Anglo. So it'll be interesting if they come back in 6 months' time with a revised offer.
Brady, IPO activities are ramping up. Australian Mexican fast food chain Guzman and Gomez hitting the boards of the ASX. What can you tell us?
Yeah, absolutely. That was announced today and it's been in the works for a very long time, but the valuation is what's catching our attention. $22 per share as soon as they hit the market. And unfortunately for small investors out there, it's going to the fundies first. So the fundies get first choice at this one. Unfortunately for the likes of myself and anyway, any other retail investor, they're not likely to get a cut of the pie when they IPO. The valuation is what's catching attention at the moment. It's quite a high valuation on what their earnings are. But if you like a Cali burrito, you might want to invest in Guzman and Gomez, but the share price is what's catching the market attention, $22 a share on IPO. The company, we might also see a bit of balking when they do IPO and do list on the market because the company's net profit actually their loss widened in the first half of FY24. So what this says is that their earnings are slower, their cost management is easing, so they're not managing costs as well as we'd like. But then again, they are on the growth front and they're expanding worldwide. So if you like a burrito, you might want to invest in Guzman and Gomez.
Okay, finally, where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Diversified exposure to AI is where I'm looking at the moment. So as we know, the NASDAQ hit all-time highs this week. And so looking at the AI bandwagon at AI rally, some people and some investors think they have missed the rally, which could be the case with the valuations through the roof, NVIDIA topping $1,000 per share this week. But the diversified exposure to AI is where I'm seeing some serious opportunities. So Goodman Group, through their diversification into the industrial REITs and really focusing on data warehouses, Telix Pharmaceuticals, for example, is in implementing Dedicaid, which improves the efficiencies and uses AI to improve efficiencies for their imaging of cancers. Retail space, Temple & Webster is using Renovi for their services and to enhance customer relationships and experiences. So across the world, across all of the different companies, exposure to AI can be felt through all the different sectors, not just the tech sector. So I'm looking for diversified AI exposure at the moment.
It's Grady Wolf there from Bell Direct.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.